Hi, Darren Francis again, coming to you today from Disrupt Ed, where I am guest hosting a series on higher education. And we're here today in San Diego at the ASU GSV conference. With me is Alana Heath, co-founder and COO of How to Change the World. How's it going?
It's going great.
Good.
Energizing being here in San Diego. So loving
Very
these
good.
Days.
Very good. Well, Alana, I want to talk a bit and just really immerse our listeners in the really unique business that you guys have going on. I mean, first of all, anybody that's out there saying that they're going to call their company How to Change the World has already got your attention. But I think what you guys are doing and what you've been building for a few years now is really impressive. And I want to unpack it a little bit with you.
Thank you. Sounds good.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, could you talk a little bit about how you guys came to be? How did this idea for this business come about?
Absolutely. So, and that will touch on the name and where the name came from. I'll slip that little anecdote in. So we were founded within University College London. So Jason Blackstock, my co-founder, was a founding head of department at UCL, and he was given the task to create one course that taught all engineering, business, and computer science students how to work on interdisciplinary teams, on real-world challenges, how to engage with stakeholders, and to collaborate to develop a solution, all through experiential techniques. Jason was like, great, that sounds awesome.
Right.
And then they said, but you have to do it for 1,500 students at a time, and there are no new resources. And he was like, oh, got it. So he developed the pedagogy, just the techniques, the methodologies, and the building blocks, the pedagogical building blocks of how to deliver mass experiential learning. And that got a bunch of attention. So within UCL, he started being asked in the department to run these programs for the Royal Academy of Engineering, then the National Academy of Engineering, and then this and that, like more and more, until it became apparent that he had to spin out.
Right.
That's when I joined. Is as soon as he spun out, we developed the independent organization. And that's when we started to build on that foundation. And the name How to Change the World came about because in this creation within UCL, Jason asked, well, it sounds like you want me to teach the students how to change the world. And they were like, that's perfect. You should call it that. And then it's such a memorable name. People don't forget it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I've not forgotten it. Sure. Well, that's great. So so maybe talk a little bit about, when you and I spoke last, you were describing a bit to me, hey, mass experiential learning is as audacious as how to change the world. But you guys have, through facilitating these large scale initiatives, you've been also sort of building a technology. And it feels to me like you have sort of two businesses. And so maybe could you unpack them both, like side by side, so that we can kind of understand what you're building at scale on the tech side as well as on the experiential side with the courses?
Absolutely. So when we spun out from UCL, everything was in person. So it was in-person experiential learning for 1,500 students. And technology was used as a light touch tool in certain circumstances. When the pandemic hit, we had to go back to the drawing board. And we were like, in-person is out for who knows how long. And about 24 of our university partners at the time turned around and said, help, we want you to do what you just did in person online. Can you do it? We said, we'll try. Yeah. And that really started the springboard of exploring and understanding how technology can support mass experiential learning. Hmm. So on the one side, we had the pedagogical building blocks, tongue twister there, don't say it fast. And then we developed, and over the past several years, we have been developing the technological tools. And when you pair those together, you get mass experiential learning through an online environment that brings, it increases the accessibility and dramatically decreases the cost. So the affordability goes up. So that's kind of that doesn't address any of the actual technology that you asked
about.
Yeah,
no. Yeah.
But the way we have developed is we developed the technology platform and the tools that we needed to deliver our own programs.
Right.
And so we were educators delivering a learning journey focused on skills development, 21st century skills, durable skills, sustainability skills. Those learning outcomes were the driving force. And we thought, okay, we have to do this online. We did a landscape of all of the tools out there that might be applicable. There is not one off-the-shelf product that we could just buy and use to deliver our programs. And so we started cobbling together what we needed to deliver this.
Right.
And we created a very light prototype, and then we built on that, and then we started seeing success where students were getting better learning outcomes in the online programs, that the diversity that we could bring together was all of a sudden an order of magnitude larger, that all of a sudden professionals, experts and professionals from across disciplines, now all of a sudden were joining because they said only 2.5 hours online. Well, I can do that. Yeah. I can't spend a day to come and mentor students in person, but hop online for 2 hours, no problem, I'll be there. So we've started to be able to really develop and build on top of the award-winning program that we had through our own development of technology.
Have you already had a sense that, I mean, it feels to me like what you're describing, having worked really well in engineering and some of these different areas, because of your focus on experiential learning, this is going to translate widely across a lot of disciplines. But are you looking at it that way? Are you being very targeted about your approach?
Great question. So we probably 90% of our university partners are engineering and business and at computer science. Sometimes okay. Computer science fits within engineering. Sometimes it's a school of its own. But that's mostly because those are the schools that have more resources and more capacity to engage in innovative new pedagogies, technologies. Like, they have that built in. But we have humanities, arts, law, music. We have students from those disciplines just at a smaller scale right now.
Yeah.
It's our aim to really... Interdisciplinary is a huge component. That's where students learn a different set of skills that are they can apply directly into the workforce.
Yeah.
In jobs, we don't go work with a bunch of other MBAs.
Right.
I mean, maybe you'll run into another MBA and be like, wow, cool, we're on the same team. How did that happen? But really, when you join a company, you have people with different skill sets and you need to know how to collaborate with them and talk to them. And that is part of the value that experiential learning can bring when you bring the different disciplines together.
I mean, it's got to be clearly the biggest feedback from the workforce side of things, from the employer side of this is, great, we've got somebody who's been trained up in the right level of engineering, but they're not a team player. They've never learned how to work in this context. Like, they end up having the soft skills, the durable skills that need to be developed. And so to me, it feels like a real differentiator across any program to offer experiential learning if you're tying it to things like these durable skills, right?
100%.
That's great.
100%. And that kind of the ability, so taking mass experiential learning, the mass part enables diversity across different disciplines. When you have 20 students, there's only so much diversity you can bring in and collaboration.
Right.
When you have 200 students or 2,000 students, all of a sudden, each interaction of a learner with another learner or a learner with a mentor or a teaching team member, it's developing different mindsets. It's developing a global mindset of engaging with different backgrounds, different cultures, people who speak different languages as their first language. Like you, when you have hundreds and thousands of people, you get that. And so when you go through, so I'll just kind of step back for a minute. Our definition of experiential learning is learning by doing in a highly structured and safe environment with very clear learning outcomes. Mm. And when you put those pieces together, then students are learning from each other in structured ways. They're learning how to communicate. They are learning how to problem solve. They're learning how to think critically and share that in a team of people who are from different disciplines and different backgrounds. They're learning these skills, the durable skills that you just mentioned, right, that in more traditional classrooms, those opportunities are lacking, whether it's all, you know, I don't know, physics 101 or, you know, the advanced accounting courses. No matter what course you're in, it's the subject matter is very focused. It's very specific. You're learning a very technical component.
Right.
You have to step out of that in order to gain those durable skills.
Right.
And get out of your comfort zone of going, I don't know how to engage in this environment. Well, in a safe and structured environment, you learn those skills and then you're able to apply them.
Wow. That's amazing. You've talked about in the math side of this, the way you've done this, in some cases, you're working with how many different schools across how many different countries in one kind of cohort? I mean, what are we talking about in terms of true diversity?
I'm thrilled by it. So that's been one of the big things across the last year that we have expanded. So our most recent boot camp had students from 27 different institutions across 22 different countries and across more disciplines than I know off the top of my head.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That would give people a great global perspective.
Yeah. And that included as well, that was the student base. Our mentors that came in, we had over 80 mentors coming in from, I have to go and ask my team to count how many countries. Like, it was even more than 22 countries because we were engaging with these professionals who want to approach and mentor the next generation, and they're eager to do it.
You know, you've got an impressive base of, as you mentioned, business and engineering and some computer science programs that you've done this work in. But I would imagine at certain points when you're having a conversation with a prospective dean, there's some level of skepticism or fear. Like, where's the friction points initially when someone's considering trying this out?
Some of the friction, and we've actually created part of our partnership package really to address this. Mm. Part of the friction was higher ed leaders value and know that they have to provide exceptional student experiences.
Right.
That's why students are going to their institution, is because they want to learn, that they want to meet networks, they want to engage, they become part of a community. So the student experience is really important. And yet students graduate and then they go on to their next phase, and alumni engagement is a different category.
Right.
And so what we found is deans saying, well, this is great. I want to offer students this experience, but then the students have the great experience. They're here for a couple more years. They graduate. How can we bring some of this knowledge into our school so that we can have students engaging in your programs, but we also are building some of that capability ourselves?
Yeah.
And that goes back to the technology that I'll kind of loop back to one of your questions earlier. But we also run an experiential educator fellowship. And so for every partnership with a faculty of engineering or a school of business, they'll send a cohort of their students, and then they'll send usually between 1 and 4 educators to our fellowship. And those educators go through a workshop and get some of the knowledge and training of what we do. It's part of our social mission of saying, we're never going to have hundreds of thousands of students in our programs. We'll have 10,000 or tens of thousands.
Right.
But schools and faculties, it's here is some of the tools for you to use for all of your other students. So that's the Educator Fellowship is one way, and the technology you mentioned is the other.
Yeah.
So as we've created this for ourselves, we are increasingly exploring how we can package that and offer that as a tool for schools to use to deliver experiential learning for their schools from within their schools.
So before we get into like the whatever the tech happens to be, like how big does it have to be effective? So like, can I do this with a cohort of 30 students versus 1500 students? Or I mean, like, is there a magic number that you need to be thinking about?
So for our programs, and you can picture the programs that we run, they're kind of the Rolls Royce of experiential learning. They have every component very intentionally designed into the experience.
Right.
Not every program, not every course has to have all of those components. So when we think of experiential learning, we kind of see ourselves at one end of the yardstick. And then there are other components. There's active learning. There's community-based learning. There's collaborative learning, peer-to-peer learning. And so what we're really working on, especially as we are designing and developing the technology, is how do we make those different choices really accessible to schools and educators? To say, I have 30 students. The pedagogy that we use is applicable for 100 students or more.
Okay. Yep.
But you can take off a few pieces of what we do, and all of a sudden, you have a brilliant pedagogy for 30 students.
So really,
or vice versa, for 500 students, you can add a couple of bells and whistles, and you get even more of an experience.
Right.
So we have identified what those components are, and now we're breaking them apart so that we offer that flexibility to really meet educators where they are to be able to offer exceptional student experiences, whether they have 30 or 90 or 500.
Yeah, yeah. That's exciting. The tech sounds like a daunting idea to build. Because you have a lot of synchronous built into this, right? And so I'm thinking about we're doing a recording from a really sophisticated phone. And we could be live broadcasting this, but the tech that's behind that kind of stuff can be relatively sophisticated. Then you bring in the fact that you've got people across maybe different countries on different continents. You've got, you know, thousands of students potentially in some cases. So I imagine it's been smooth from day one building this tech. But
obviously, there have been no bumps.
But I mean, talk a little bit about how you guys feel after having done it and sort of stress tested it on the level that you have about having built something so sophisticated, because it feels very sophisticated.
It is and it isn't. I will say the biggest challenge that we cannot actually fix are time zones.
Yeah.
And I say it with a laugh, but it's also true. Like, we just, no matter what we do, technology can't fix that. That challenge with global learning. But on a more practical note, our approach has been to make the technology as simple as possible. And so our aim, the goal that we are working towards, and we have iterated and improved, I won't say that we're there yet.
Right.
But is to make the technology so simple that you forget that you're actually on a screen and the technology melts into the background. And its one and only primary job is to facilitate human-to-human interaction.
Yeah.
So one of the questions we get asked a lot is, oh, are you using AI? I think everyone's asked this question. Yeah. And our answer is yes. In a variety of ways, we are integrating it to support the learning experience. But at the end of the day, experiential learning succeeds and provides the skills that learners need in their careers.
Right.
Because it teaches skills around human-to-human interaction. Whether you are on a screen or in person, that doesn't matter. the skills translate. And so the technology that we're building, while it is sophisticated in the background, it is actually kind of stripped bare so that there are not distractions, that there is a streamlined engagement and interaction, that learners are not being kind of dazzled by the technology in front of them.
Right.
It's just simple. And they're having a conversation and their focus is on the other human or on the humans that they're engaging with.
Right. So would I be wrong to say that it is primarily most beneficial in a synchronous online way? I mean, is it ever hybrid? Like some people are face-to-face, other people are online, or is it ever a component is asynchronous for some reason?
Yeah.
Like maybe explain.
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
For those questions.
Yeah.
In our, again, kind of the Rolls-Royce version, we put all the materials, all the content is asynchronous.
Okay.
And all of the interactions are synchronous.
Okay.
And that for us puts the emphasis on the engagement.
Yeah.
And content is important. Content is a tool that can support and facilitate knowledge. But content itself, there's not much to it. It's mostly free. You can get high quality content now on your phone, in your pocket.
Right.
And so we really believe that the value is in those synchronous interactions.
Right.
Now, when I was sharing, like, there's collaborative learning and active learning and community-based learning, that's how, right now, as we build out the technology and design that, we are thinking through what are the components. And so, yes, there is absolutely value to having some synchronous within a significant amount asynchronous.
Right.
And there is, we haven't quite cracked how to go completely asynchronous, because it's a little counterintuitive, because human-to-human interaction is a big component of experiential learning. So if you take that out completely,
right,
we don't quite have an answer to that.
Yeah.
We're kind of like, we're like, well, maybe it's possible. It must be possible. We're not going to say it's impossible, but that human-to-human interaction, it is a really important piece of experiential learning that technology, an AI chatbot, can't replace.
Right.
It can support, but it can't replace.
Yeah. I mean, it feels to me like from just a pure technology standpoint, you're solving the hardest problems first by making the synchronous component as ubiquitous and, like, I forgot how you said it, but just sort of it becomes sort of a non-issue to the learner. So the learner can focus on the other learners and on the learning as opposed to the technology.
Yeah.
That to me seems like the hard thing to do in building a technology platform.
Yeah.
And the asynchronous, if it happens, will probably end up being easier once you know how you want to do it. I'm curious, you are going to at some point integrate to like the university or college's learning management system as well, or is it always going to be outside of a learning management system?
Great question. And I'm going to probably pass on that one.
Yeah.
Because we don't fully have an answer. I mean, yes, we need to integrate in.
Yep.
How and what that looks like. There are kind of a couple of pathways.
Okay.
To achieve that end. So kind of the easy answer is yes, we will need to integrate. Like, we can't be a system just
right.
Hovering on the outside.
Yeah.
But what does that integration look like? And how do we really make sure that the systems are complementary and that there's not any redundancy that is designed intentionally? And I'll say that is kind of one of the harder design questions.
Yep.
To make sure that a similar one is, well, with synchronous, there's video and voice. What if an institution, and there are institutions that say, we use Teams, we use Zoom,
right.
That is our system. And so we need to make sure that we can say no problem.
Right.
You can take out this piece, integrate that piece. You work within your system.
Right. Still, I mean, it's hard changing the world. It's hard changing
it's
the world.
It's not easy. Yeah. Not easy. If it,
but
we'd like it to be feel a little simpler.
Yeah.
So that more people do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you're leading the way in a really interesting way for this to be coming about. I'm curious. So today, if somebody were to be, if a college or university was interested in learning more, what are the components that are available today that they could reach out to you? I'm a dean at a business school or whatever and say, I'd like to do this. What parts can they do today? What parts are sort of future? And then do you have a sense if there's some future components, like how far out we're talking before they can, you know, do change the world themselves, I guess.
Perfect. Everyone can start changing the world today. That's, there's no time like the present. So we develop partnerships. And what that is centered around is the student experience and the educator fellowship.
Yep.
And so those are the two components around skills development for students and training, professional development and training for educators to understand and learn what we do to take it back to their institutions.
Awesome.
The technology that will be licensable, that is a little ways out. We are right now working to identify and work with our first initial kind of pilot partners so that we are co-designing this and ensuring that it is, that we don't have blind spots. So that process is already happening. I think it's probably, without holding me to this, probably a year out from when we have kind of that first version that will be packaged and ready to go.
That's awesome. Well, you know, you're going to have schools that are going to want to be a part of early beta.
Yes.
You're going to have people that are going to want to engage you in that process. And so I would encourage those folks to reach out to you as well. How do they find you and Jason these days? What's the best way to contact you?
You can Google how to change the world. howtochangetheworld.org. There's little dashes between each word, though. That's the best way, or my email. So COO@htctw.org. It's the acronym.
Yep. Yep.
Shorter to type. That's the direct email that can reach me. And I love talking to potential new partners, anyone who's interested, because there's always a place for anyone who's interested in changing the world.
That's awesome. Well, thank you, Alana. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
It's great to get to meet you in person here in San Diego.
Yeah.
And Jason as well. So safe travels back, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Darren.